Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is the High Hopes Podcast.
High Hopes.
On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
This crowd was singing High Hopes. Smiling through a broken nose. Oh, High Hopes. High Hopes.
I feel a little less alone.
Gotta be honest, I kind of thought they were going to come back and win that game. And then Tanner Banks happened. Welcome on in. It is the High Hopes Podcast, a little post-game edition, as there's no final app this week because I'm on vacation, which means we can go 5 minutes after the game rather than a half hour after the game, which gets everyone to bed that much quicker. Tucker Bagley joins me tonight. And Tucker, it kind of felt like a win. It felt like a win. And then all
I mean, there was a shot. They had a shot.
I know. But what kind of is hitting you after that one tonight?
We mentioned it briefly last night about, you know, kind of the dire situation of the bullpen. And I think tonight made it hit even harder, right? I mean, your two top lefties out of the bullpen, like, notwithstanding whatever you think of Tim Mesa. But you came to the season with Tanner Banks and Jose Alvarado as your top two lefties. They both have an ERA over 7 after tonight. They both looked incredibly ineffective. They have looked ineffective for most of the year. And now you kind of look at where this bullpen is, and you have Duran, you have Kirkering, who's been up and down, but he's carrying a 2.5 ERA right now. That's really about it. I mean, outside of, like I said, Tim Mesa, especially on the left side, like, Backes has stunk, Alvarado has stunk, Banks has stunk. And even with that, like, you had a situation where Kyle Schwarber came up with 2 on, down 3 runs, representing the tying run. You know, you had a shot to tie the game, and it felt like a game earlier in the season where when one thing went wrong, it kind of snowballed and got out of control. And that's kind of how their losses have felt. Like, that's how Monday felt against Kansas City. I mean, they're a team that I don't know if they do enough good things correctly to where, you know, they can limit damage. Because when other teams, I mean, they gave up back-to-back-to-back home runs thanks to Tanner Banks. But they're a team that when things start to get out of control, they don't necessarily find a way to get themselves back into the game.
Well, they certainly struggle to stop the bleeding, I'll tell you that. And they're not helping the run differential the last couple of games. And the way that the bullpen is pitching right now, and you mentioned it, it's Duran, it's Kirkering. A huge spot for Brad Keller tonight. You know, I'm so glad that he was in the 11-4 game and maybe not a little bit earlier. But they struggle to have the guys in the bullpen right now that can just keep the game close and keep it within striking distance for the offense to be able to come through and feel like it's within reach. What's happened the last, I mean, little bit here is that when it's tight late, these guys are giving it away. I mean, Seth Johnson and Kyle Backes on Saturday. On Sunday. The 15-1 game. Now, that was Sanchez-related more than anything. But still, you know, they could not keep that game close. And then today, I mean, even some of the Pittsburgh games where you would love to say that, hey, we're still in this thing. We might be shaping up to where they need 2 bullpen arms. And a lefty... A lefty is imperative. It feels like every single night we are playing trade deadline roulette. When the starter sucks, it's like you got to get a starter or else you have no chance to win. And hey, if you get a starter, you know, it kind of limits what you need in the bullpen anyway. And then when the bullpen sucks, like, well, actually the most important thing for this team is the bullpen. And then when Gabriel Rincon hits the ball 113 miles an hour off the bat, off the right field wall, you're kind of like, hey, I don't know. Could we, if we get Tommy Pham up here, is there some kind of platoon there in right field where everything could be okay? And let's go make a Super Bowl pen. It's the roulette wheel that this team is on heading into the trade deadline. It's trade deadline month. I know it's technically August. But if your takeaway from the night is not this bullpen you're hitting the panic alarm on, then you're just, it's the only takeaway from the game. They had a chance to come back and win it. Had that game remained close, I feel like with the Reds bullpen being the way that it is at that ballpark, which, by the way, Tucker, it felt a little like 2019 with some of those balls tonight going out. Like it was.
You hear that they called it Great American Small Park?
That's good. That's good.
Which I thought was clever.
Was that a Ravi production or no?
Yeah, he said they call it that as if I've never heard it before. He credited, I guess, just, you know, society in general that's nice. A nickname it goes by, but I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff. And tonight, you know, in Jackie battles Walker for bedtime, I was listening to the game while laying down. I think I was reading Little Blue Truck or Goodnight Moon, you know, and all I hear
classics.
Well, you know, this, I hope when Walker gets older, he's going to say, yeah, my dad has put me to sleep. We'd be just listening to the Phillies game on my phone. I feel like there's so many stories growing up. It's like, I used to listen to WIP on my radio while I fell asleep. Well, Walker's going to be listening to the Franskin Stalker. And it was the Stalker play-by-play of things. And all I kept hearing out of the corner of my ear was, and that's another home run. And that's another home run. It was, I was sitting there trying to remain calm. Of course, you know, we got to remain calm and try to get the boy to sleep.
But yeah, bigger fish to fry at that point.
We do. I still did have to roll over and tweet that Tanner Banks would struggle to get outs in the PSAC. We had to focus on the important things per usual. But man, it bullpen all of a sudden. And I it sucks that we're here because I really felt heading into the year the bullpen was going to be one of the strengths of this team. But heading into the deadline, you know, Chapman, I think, is, you want to go get the combo of Chapman and Whitlock. It's the 2026 version of Workman and Embry, and let's build ourselves a little bit of a super pen and knock this nonsense off.
Well, it's funny because on the TV broadcast they kept bringing up, you know, how bad the Phillies needed a right-handed bat, which they do. They also pointed out this note: Phillies right-handed hitters lowest on base percentage among right-handed hitters for a team since 1974.
Seems bad.
It's 271. That's not great. I mean, if Derek Hill's kind of your best right-handed hitter against lefties at this point, that's an issue. But yeah, I mean, you just look at, if we're looking ahead to October, obviously they need help at the back end of the rotation, but that's not really going to be a huge factor when you make the playoffs. Obviously you need a right-handed bat, but really we've seen this team, when they succeed in the playoffs, it's because Schwarbert, Harper, the guys at the top of the lineup carry you. You need help in the bullpen, because if these guys are going to be only going, you know, five or six high leverage innings and turning it over, you just don't have the arms right now. And, you know, you lost the Met series partially because your bullpen kind of fell apart. You lost the Dodger series last year partially because your bullpen fell apart. And right now, I mean, thank goodness for Duran being, you know, in the ninth inning, and at least you have that. You have that big piece moving forward. But other than that, I mean, there's just no one that you can trust right now to get a big out. Maybe Jonathan Bolin. Like, if it's seventh inning, two guys on, two outs, you need to bring a guy in, he might be the guy that you trust, right? Like, is there somebody else that you would turn to?
Well, and 2 weeks ago, Jonathan Bolin allowed the home run to Curtis Meade and also had there's a bad outing after that, if I remember correctly. So, you know, Bolin's on a little bit of a hot streak, but I agree with you. Like, he's one of those guys. And the thing that they have to be debating within the walls of Citizens Bank Park is, because there is a case for a starter. Like, if you go get a starter, if you go get a real guy, you go get a Sonny Gray.
Because we've seen them get the back end guy who then doesn't even play. Like, you don't need a Michael Lorenzen who takes down 8 regular season starts and then doesn't get to pitch in the postseason.
Sure. But, like, if you wanted the case to be made for a starter, it's go get a Sonny Gray type of real guy. And that kind of limits how much you need the bullpen because, you know, those guys should give you 6 or 7 quality innings. And then it kind of falls into form there. I guess my case is, First off, a starter is going to cost way more in the trade market. And I know that reliever market has gotten crazy. I mean, Carlos Estevez as a rental 2 years ago cost them George Klaassen, who, I mean, he's had a cup of coffee in the big leagues. And but I mean, he's like a top 100 prospect, or was top 100 prospect. I haven't checked in a while. And then Samuel Adegari, who is pitching at the big league level. I mean, that's a pretty hefty price for a half season of Carlos Estevez. So I do think the reliever market has changed. But I guess you could be making the case of a starter is going to cost a lot. Why not just try to make this bullpen as good as we possibly can? And maybe it costs a little bit less prospect wise. You feel good about the three you have. It's still that one game four that they're going to have to get through that gives you a lot of cause for pause, where if you did go get a real starter, first off, you could get a little creative with some bullpen options there. But getting a real starter and having game four pretty locked down and how that could affect the rest of your bullpen. I mean, Tucker, they haven't won a start by their game four. Their number five starter since May 18th.
Like, yeah.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
You would think eventually we would just outscore the other team.
Just luck into one. You know, when Carlton pitched back in the 72 Phillies, they used to call it win day. I wonder what they call it when they know it's number five starter day. It's like, well, do we even need to show up tonight? And the shame of it is, Alan Rangel's fine. Like, I've been pretty impressed with Alan Rangel. I know he allowed some home runs tonight, but what you're looking for out of a fifth starter, he kind of just does his job. He's
and he had some swing and miss stuff.
He did.
He got a few swings and misses. He got some strikeouts. Like, he was fine. Unbelievable arm angle. I never really looked at his arm angle before. Most over the top arm angle I've ever seen. Well, he used to move his head in order to let the ball go.
Trey Savage would have something to say about it, but I agree with you. It's pretty over the top. It's he is mini Yosevich, as many are saying. Many are calling Alan Rangel the mini Yosevich. But yes,
but
I agree.
If you want to fix the back end of the rotation, like, I guess the template for that success would probably be the 2019 Nationals. I mean, their bullpen stunk in the regular season. Oh. And they kind of just rode their starters and Sean Doolittle in the postseason. Like, Patrick Corbin, I think, had five or six outings out of the bullpen during that World Series run. I mean, you can do it. And maybe it's just a matter of figuring out what the most quality arms you can get into that bullpen and trusting Don Mattingly to kind of put the pieces together.
When he said it, there's a nice little cold shiver down my spine. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see on old Donnie Baseball. And, you know, the most extreme case is last year's Dodgers, who just brought Glasnow out of the pen. Sasaki, I know, is not at the same level of starting pitcher as
isn't it cool he was the best pitcher in the world for just the NLDS and then went back to sucking.
I know, it's one of the most sick jokes of the last
and like Kodai Senga being unbelievable and then just falling apart again.
Well, that, no one is better at making Kodai Senga look like the best pitcher on the planet quite like the Philadelphia Phillies. There's no doubt about that. Sasaki is infuriating. It's not as infuriating as the 2-2 call to Alex call, but it's up there. It's up there. I mean, it's pretty up there.
It's
horrendous.
Just hilarious when you look at it. Like, I watched him, I was like, man, this guy's going to be the best pitcher in baseball for a decade. And it's like, oh, never mind. He might not have major league talent anymore.
Yeah, he stinks. He stinks. Yeah. So, and you know that Dombrowski is a starter's guy.
Totally.
He always wants to go get the pitcher. And, you know, man, we always say, like, this is going to be the most fascinating deadline. It's like, this is the most important election of all time. That's what is every election. So, like, that's how I feel about this trade deadline. Is it's obviously an important trade deadline, but it is also just a really, really interesting deadline, because it does feel like, Tucker, every single day, the calculus changes as to what they should do and what they can do. And I know they lost tonight, but, like, Rinconis is at least showing a real pulse. I mean, hitting a ball 113 miles an hour off of Chase Burns is not nothing. And I can't the tough part of the next month is going to be and I would not make this bet, to be clear. But can he just be the left-handed option against right-handed pitching, and you go get some other real right-handed bat that can supplant him in right field when necessary? Like, can he do that? I think is going to be a huge question for the next month.
Yeah, because I mean, in theory, like, you don't need that much help against right-handed pitching, right? That's the one thing that this offense does well, is it mashes righties. And even their first rally, where they score their first two runs, where he hits that double off the top of the wall, Crawford drives him in, Crawford scores on a wild pitch. Like, those were the things you kind of expected from those guys. Like, I think Rinconis has played really well, has hit really well the last week or so. But I mean, the flip side is, like, I don't want to turn down a real difference making bat because you have Gabriel Rincones, right? But you kind of look at all of the holes this team has, and obviously you would say, well, maybe they should go fix them all, but where are you trading from, right? Outside of Gage Wood, like, you don't have enough impact prospects down in the farm system where you can add 2, 3, 4. And I know you're giving me that look, but you don't have the depth, right, to go out and really get, you know, 3 or 4 difference makers and turn this team around.
Yeah, I mean, to make a trade, let's say with the Red Sox, who, by the way, seem like they're kind of back in it with the AL being as bad as it is.
I think everyone's in the AL, except for the Angels. Everyone's kind of in the AL.
Yeah. Like, if you want to make a trade with them and you want to get all three of those guys, I agree. Like, that's a depleting of the farm system, you know, type move. Being able to get all three, it's a pretty tall task. Like, you might just have to like say a prayer for one of those three that just, hey, hopefully this works. And I think that's going to be the hard part heading into the next month, because I agree with you from the standpoint of, like, they can't go out and trade everything. I don't know if any team could say, hey, I need to go get a starting right fielder, a number 4 starter for the postseason that's good enough to start a playoff game, and go get me, like, a real late inning relief. I don't know how many farm systems are capable of being able to say, hey, go do that. So, yeah, I mean, not to make it all about the trade deadline, but it really feels like this next month is just going to, it's going to be so much trade deadline conversation, because it's really, really fascinating. But
it's just crazy. They look like a different team every night.
Well, yeah,
they look like last year's team when they go out and win 4-1, and they routinely put together good ball games. And then you have games like tonight, you have games like Monday where, you know, they can look overmatched pretty easily, and they aren't exactly playing playoff teams right now.
No, it gets ugly pretty quickly. It gets ugly pretty quickly. Now, there's some other interesting stuff that happened tonight out of nowhere. I wasn't sure how much we were going to have to talk about tonight after an 11-5 game. Big Schwarber home run to make that 11-5 there in the ninth.
May or may not have already made the WIP live stream tomorrow saying 11-4. So if you see that, just let it be known it was made in the eighth inning, because I didn't feel like waiting.
Yeah, just say oops, you know?
That's all right.
We don't need to be all about accuracy on the WIP live stream. It did get me thinking, though, about how I do think Schwarber... Is Schwarber going to be the only member of the 16 Cubs that's going to make the Hall of Fame? Think about that team. At that time, Rizzo.
Do you think Chapman gets in?
I don't. Lester's the only one that I really think has a chance to get in besides Schwarber. Like, Rizzo will fall short. Wilson yep. Contreras will fall short. Yep. For as much as I need Wilson Contreras, he will fall short. Chris Bryant should be, but he's played 170 games in his last 4 years. A total bummer.
Are you glad we got Schwarber instead of Bryant?
Yeah, believe it or not. Who could forget Bryant Lent after Harper Lent? You never do a sequel. Never do a sequel.
Never as good as the original.
Yeah, that's why there will never be another ovation. Jason Hayward, no. No. Jake Arrieta, obviously not. Chapman's a good one. Chapman's definitely a good one. I don't think he would get in, just first reaction to you saying that. But I think that Schwarber might be the only, and like, his Cubs career will be a factor, but he's not going to make the Hall of Fame off of being a Cub. Like, he'll have a title because of a Cub, but he got DFA'd as a Cub. So You know, him and Wheeler both coming here and possibly turning into Hall of Famers is pretty dang good. Pretty dang good as he climbs the charts. But couple things. So first and foremost, Harper did hit leadoff today. And according to Don Mattingly, he volunteered the idea. And I don't know, Tucker, could bullying have worked yet again with Bryce? The online and call in podcasters saying, hey, you should probably bat leadoff, you know, if not second. Did it finally work? Or tomorrow, is he going to be right back to hitting third?
I think he's probably back at third tomorrow, right? 100%. If Trey Turner's in the lineup, Bryce Harper's hitting third because Trey Turner likes hitting leadoff and Bryce Harper likes hitting third, so everyone's happy when that's the case. But it was interesting. Like, I actually didn't look at the lineup before the game started, and I saw him up, and I thought I must have missed the first out. I must have just missed the first out because there's no way that he would be batting leadoff. But
yeah.
I mean, at this point, like, it makes sense. He's probably the best profile. He takes a lot of pitches. He walks a ton. If you're not going to put Schwarber there and, you know, keep Schwarber behind him, it makes sense. And he gets that protection that I think he's desperately needed.
Yeah, and he is also going through I think after tonight, is now a 4-for-28 slump. He did walk twice. The walk rate's been fine, even though he's been slumping.
But how many walks are we supposed to get this year? 190?
Between 130 and 140 is what he was saying that he wanted to get.
Said 81. So walk watch is on.
Oh, man. This is exciting. This is big stuff. So he will 100% be batting third tomorrow if Trey's back in the lineup. I like the idea that he volunteered to bat first because, you know, Don or Rob Thompson before him would not just put him at first. He would need the go ahead to say, it's okay, you can bat me first, I will do it. So it was appreciated that he did it. Would like to see more of it. I mean, to start a lineup, if you can go Harper, Schwarber, Turner, Marsh, I'll take it. Now it splits it up a little bit. I know Turner hasn't been great, but at least from the standpoint of splitting it up and not having three straight lefties, and Turner does have a pretty good OPS against lefties this year. Who cares? I feel like I'm wasting breath even talking about it, Tucker, because there's a 0% chance that he is going to be batting leadoff tomorrow. If Trey Turner is in the lineup. But for one night, it was good to see Bryce say, hey, I'll do it. And maybe, just maybe, this will make him think about, I'll play right field for a year and a half, just so you can go get Wilson Contreras.
Yeah, I feel like good guy Bryce needs to make a comeback. I've been thinking about it a lot this year. Like, he really hasn't been in the spotlight a whole lot. Like, it might still be his team, but, you know, Schwarber gets a lot more headlines. Wheeler's gotten a lot more headlines. Sanchez has been, you know, arguably their best player this year. And, you know, Bryce Harper has to go out and sell these septa cleats that he just released yesterday. So that means getting, you know, more at-bats by batting at the top of the lineup. So be it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Philadelphia's own, the southeastern Pennsylvania. I don't know how it ends. Whatever.
Transit Association?
Transit Association, if I had to guess. Whenever you think of Philly, I just think of how much we just walk around talking about
how much we love it. How much everyone talks about how much they love SEPTA. And man, if there was one thing that deserves honoring in this great area, it's SEPTA.
Oh man, like the fans are chanting SEPTA. SEPTA.
You think it's, what do you think sells better, his Mets cleats or his SEPTA cleats?
I don't know, man. I'm not gonna make that joke. I'm not gonna make the joke. But the SEPTA thing, I didn't even know what it was. I saw the cleats and I'm like, yeah, they're cool. Whatever. Like, I'm not like,
it's cool. They're like blue and orange. Like, that's weird.
And then I saw it's for SEPTA, and I just said, why? For what, not to diss SEPTA, but it seems
the best was he posted a photograph of himself sitting on top of a SEPTA bus wearing the cleats, which is obviously photoshopped. He's never gone out of his way to go sit on top of a bus, but I appreciate the commitment to the bit. Like, I guess there's only so many years that you can pander with the fanatic before you have to
I don't think
go elsewhere ever, in the city.
I don't think he's ever seen a Septibus. If I'm being completely honest with you, I don't.
No, he's driving from Haddonfield to the ballpark and back. He's not going through any SEPTA hotspots.
Like maybe right outside the ballpark, but I don't know, man. He's a good marketer. I don't. The last 2 years between the rivalry pack and septic leads, I don't know, Jim. I don't know if this is landing. I don't know if this is landing the way that we thought it was going to land. So, either way, the guy did bat lead off tonight, and we much appreciate that. We'll see if he's doing it tomorrow. There's a 0% chance he is. My only hope is that maybe this could lead to him being like, "Hey, I'll go play right field, and you can go get Wilson Contreras." That's all that I really, really care about. Couple other things. Zach Wheeler still very, very mad about not making the All-Star game. Says last night after the game, I appreciate it. I love because I think that pitchers get better when there's a little bit of a chip. And I don't think there's a feeling in sports like watching a pitcher that has a chip on his shoulder. Like, I love it because pitching is one thing in all of sports that you dictate the entire game. In a team sport, you dictate how that game is going to go. And him saying after the game that I hope the vote, basically saying, I hope the voters saw that. Like, that was for them. I appreciate it. I really do. And him saying to Buster Olney before the game that I'll pitch on 2 days rest. I don't care. I just want to make the team. It's pretty intense. I'll say that. But, man, I don't think I've seen an athlete be so mad about a snub than 2026 Zach Wheeler. It's crazy.
And be so right about it. Right. Yes. Like, you see guys who say, like, I'm deserving, or, you know, it might come off a little selfish, but I mean, he deserves it. Right. And I think his attitude about it is kind of such an old school, like an endearing way where he's basically saying, like, I do deserve it. I am the best. I don't care. I'll pitch on 2 days rest. It doesn't matter to me. I'll go out there. I'll go sit in the bullpen. I'm ready to go. I think it's really cool. Like, I don't think a lot of athletes are going out there saying that or doing that.
So when Tobias Harris screamed at a empty Wells Fargo Center at the time, COVID crowd, that he's an All-Star, it didn't hit the same as when Zach Wheeler was making his campaign in 2026.
No, it didn't. And Tobias yelling, have fun in the play-in this year, as you know, him and the Pistons beat a weak Sixers team at the end of the year. Yeah, that didn't do much for me either.
Really? That's interesting. Yeah, so it almost feels like Major League Baseball should. Well, Tucker, to be completely honest and be a smidge selfish for a second, I kind of hope he doesn't make the All-Star team, because I think that he would go on a
revenge tour second half of the season.
Just a crazy, crazy pace in the second half. And ultimately, I care more about winning the World Series than Zach Wheeler making the All-Star team. I think he deserves it. I want him to be an All-Star, but it could be the best thing for the team if he does not make the All-Star team, which is...
It's crazy that his numbers are better than 2024 when he was second in Cy Young voting. Like, ERA is lower, K per 9 is identical, his FIP is almost identical, his whip is like a half a point lower. It's insane.
Yeah, man. I was just breaking down the FIP this morning. I was like, oh, so much FIP, more FIP. Anything I can get to get more FIP in my life, I'll take. And what makes it even more impressive to me is, again, I thought some of those home runs tonight were nonsense. Like, clearly the ball being a little bit juiced, being in that ballpark, the weather
like
heating
Romito's
up.
Like home run?
Like, hold on. That was kind of a shot. It's a shame that no one's going to wake up tomorrow thinking about the JT home run, because it was, you know, kind of in a big spot.
He's got like three in the last couple of weeks. He's heating up.
It's big stuff. But, I mean, like the South Stewart one down the line, I didn't appreciate that one. But it makes what Zach Wheeler did last night that much more impressive, is striking out 14 with a clearly, clearly juiced baseball. And I'm still pro-juiced baseball because I do think we need more offense in the game. There was some Mickey Mouse stuff in 19 that I didn't like at all. I haven't noticed much Mickey Mouse. Tonight was a smidge Mickey Mouse that we need to knock out. But yeah, a part of me is like, I'm okay if you don't put Zach Wheeler in the All-Star game, because I think he'd be pretty dang sick for the rest of the year if he didn't. The other newsy thing, Don Mattingly officially says that he wants to be the manager next year, which does throw a wrench in this whole thing and certainly makes what he said this entire offseason. Now, I understand why he said it. Rob Thompson is a friend. They work together with the Yankees. He doesn't want to come in and say, I have aspirations to manage again, because immediately from day one, all anyone will say is, you know, fire Thompson and get Mattingly in there. Not with any merit besides he's done Mattingly, and no looking at the previous records with the Dodgers and the Marlins. Just get him in there. He's done Mattingly, knows what he's doing, knows the game, played the game.
Play the game. That's a big part.
But he, after Dave Uram, the Bulldog, last week, with the urging of the afternoon show to ask him, hey, what do you think about managing next year? He said, we'll wait and see, or something along those lines, at the end of a 1.5-minute rambling answer about nothing. He said, we'll see. And then tonight, with, again, Buster Olney, he said, I would like to manage the team next year. And that's noteworthy, especially because Bob Nightingale reported that they are still have their eyes set on Alex Cora. And I tell you what, if they go on a run and they make the playoffs and they even win a first-round series, I don't know. I think it'd be really, really hard to go look these guys in the mirror and say, hey, we're moving on from Don Mattingly. I think he's done such a good job that I don't know how it'd be received if they moved on from Mattingly at the end.
Yeah, I don't think the team could move on from him, right? It would have to come from him to say, you know, this was a temporary thing, which is funny because we did this with Rob Thompson. We didn't kind of know about it until after the fact, but, you know, he was planning on retiring. He got the interim manager job, took it all the way to the World Series and said, this is kind of fun. I'll stick around for a while and, you know, stuck around for what, 4 more years, 3.5 more years. So I don't know, maybe Mattingly is kind of in the same boat as Topper was. I mean, with each win and as, you know, they continue to go towards the playoffs. And like you said, if they go deep in the playoffs, it's going to be harder to oust him from that post. But yeah, I think it's kind of interesting because unlike the Rob Thompson situation, they clearly do have a preferred plan A, and it's not Don Mattingly. Like, they clearly do prefer Alex Cora. They offered him the job before they even fired Rob Thompson. They're still interested in him, according to Bob Nightingale. So if they're going to keep courting this guy for the next 6 months while Don Mattingly leads the hottest team in baseball, it could lead to like a really awkward situation in mid-October where you have to decide whether to keep the guy who everyone in the clubhouse probably adores at that point, or move on and say, this is the guy we wanted all along. He just wanted to spend the summer with his family.
Yeah. By the way, I like the Freudian slip there of Bob Nightingale.
Bob Nightingale.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. I think that's pretty good. So on one hand, I'm like, hey, stop leaking that you like Alex Cora so much. Take it down a notch. You guys are playing great baseball.
Desperate.
Yeah, it's just, and it's a manager. I appreciate managers, but we're going a little overboard. And I do like Alex Cora a lot, and I think he's a potential difference making manager. On one hand, I can't tell if Dave Dombrowski is playing 3D chess again, like he did with Bryce, and where I said, that was a throwaway, he didn't mean it. Maybe he did to get him going. And maybe by leaking that we still want Alex Cora, it's a little, you guys better keep it up. Like, you guys better, if you want to keep Don Mattingly, we'll keep Don Mattingly, but you guys better win, and you better win at a high clip. Bad guy Dombrowski. Like, we might be his villain era. I mean, maybe, you know, taking a little page out of the 1980 Phillies, where, you know, Rulli Carpenter, now it's not the owner, but, you know, Rulli Carpenter saying, hey, we're going to break this team up if you guys don't win the World Series this year or make the World Series this year. Maybe, just maybe, the old dog, Dave Dombrowski, has a new trick up his sleeve, manipulating the Phillies through press conferences and a bunch of media stuff. I don't know.
Just emotional manipulation from Dave Dombrowski. It'd be interesting. It'd be like, it would be, you know, the first new thing he pulled off in a while. So,
yeah. Well, like we mentioned last night, his tenure's kind of heating up a little bit. It's heating up a little bit. He's figuring it out. Well, tonight sucked. It was a brutal loss. Tanner Banks, again, would struggle. Oh, and we didn't even mention him. I can't believe that we've been 33 minutes on this podcast. And that's just a, like, where is Seltzer? Just not keeping this thing on track. Dude, Jose Alvarado is just dreadful. I mean, a dreadful experience watching him pitch now. How many, Tucker, have you seen a lefty miss the inside corner with a fastball more times in an outing than Jose Alvarado did tonight? Every fastball in, he almost hit the guy. It was crazy. What a dreadful experience.
I think of his first 28 pitches, 18 were balls, 10 were strikes. He walked three batters and obviously gave up the big hit. I mean, what's weird is, like, his stuff is still there. His K/9 is still over 12. Like, he's still the same guy. He's just far more erratic than he ever was before. And he was incredibly erratic when he was good. It's just, I don't know what you can do with him. It's not like you can, do you just send him down? Like, no one would claim him off waivers unless they think they could really, you know, recapture his glory of 2022. But I don't know. You obviously don't have any other lefty options to bring up right now, but I mean, you're going to go into a game tomorrow with him and Tanner Banks. I don't know if they'll both be available because of how much they pitched today, but your top two lefties out of the bullpen have an ERA north of 7. Not ideal.
Yeah. Well, and the guy that you kind of were thinking, hey, he's going to come back, maybe he works his way into a leverage spot, is Kyle Backus. And he's been so bad that he got sent down for Alan Ronhell today. So, you know, that hasn't worked out. Tim Mayza, perfectly fine. He could get outs in the PSAC. I could confirm that firsthand. Can get outs at the big league level as well. But he's, I think, a third lefty in the bullpen that can be an opener and a fifth, sixth inning guy. I don't think
he's fine for the role he's in. I don't think he's a high leverage guy.
Yeah. But they simply don't have a choice but to keep rolling Alvarado out there and seeing if they can find anything. Will they? I don't think they will. But, man, that finding a lefty, maybe it's Chapman. If it's not Chapman, they'll find someone else. But getting a real lefty at the deadline is imperative. ERAs over 7 from your two, quote-unquote.
How did Banks have an ERA of 3.06 last year?
He had stones, man. I mean, Tanner Banks had stones. He had confidence. The stuff never impressed me at all, and I have no idea. It's one of the most smoke and mirrors year. It's like the Stutz year of 2011.
Remind me a little bit of Brad Hand. Like, he's just flipping these sliders up there, and people are missing them.
Brad Hand was atrocious in 22, just atrocious. And his numbers would suggest that he was not, but he was. Man, it's a bit dire. But, you know, Brooks Rally is out there. AJ Minter, he's got a 0.51 ERA for the Mets. He's back healthy. We could use him. We got to make a trade with the Mets. Luke Weaver and AJ Minter at the deadline. Let's get crazy. Ooh. Let's get crazy. All right, Tucker. Appreciate you joining as always. I don't think we need any final thoughts because we are 37 minutes into a post-game show of an 11-5 loss, as normal people would do. So, you know, that's going to do it for us. We will be back tomorrow reacting to what is hopefully a series win out in Cincinnati. For Tucker Bagley, for Jack Fritz, this has been the High Oaks Podcast presented by Miller Lite. We'll talk to you tomorrow.